Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. The election is in just 24 days, and there are a lot of headlines out there about Republican efforts to suppress the vote and steal the election. NBC reports Republicans have filed lawsuits over the past week in three pivotal battleground states seeking to challenge the legitimacy of some ballots cast by U.S. citizens living abroad, including members of the military, arguing that some votes are prone to fraud. Election officials in those states, Michigan, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, and nonpartisan voting experts strongly defended the previously uncontroversial overseas voting rules, saying that the lawsuits amount to efforts to further lay the groundwork to question the veracity of election results. CNN reports key swing states like North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Michigan are experiencing a high volume of mail-in and absentee voting that has prompted multiple lawsuits in battleground states where Republicans are suing to challenge everything from whether mail-in ballot envelopes are properly sealed to whether they are postmarked correctly. Truthout reports, in key swing states battered by hurricanes, voting rights groups are challenging Republican state leaders over ballot access as elections approach and millions of people contend with ongoing evacuations and recovery. In two recent pieces for The Guardian, today's guest, David Daley, writes, if the right strews constitutional chaos over the certification of this presidential election, two people will have cleared the path, Republican strategist Chris Jankowski and Leonard Leo, a key architect of the Supreme Court's conservative supermajority, have re-engineered the U.S. electoral system in favor of Republicans. In a second piece, he writes, millions of Americans will vote this fall, but six Republican justices might have the final say. David Daley is a journalist and author of three books, including Rat Effed, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy, Unrigged, How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy, and his latest, Anti-Democratic, Inside the Far Right's 50-Year Plot to Control American Elections. Hi, David. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Always a pleasure, Rose. Thanks for having me back.
Well, David, back in 2016, you wrote the book that exposed the Republican gerrymandering plan called Rat Effed. So given all of the work you've done over the years, can you talk about what is at stake in 24 days?
Absolutely. In many ways, the work I've done over all these years, I think, is building up to this moment because this is how Republicans have been laying the groundwork. And they've done so right under our noses. And the very goal of this is to ensure advantages in elections, especially in very close elections in swing states. And so what Republicans won when they gerrymandered so much of the nation's state legislatures and congressional delegations, going back a decade and a half ago, going back to the 2010-2011 cycle, gerrymanders that still endure in places like Wisconsin and Ohio and Georgia and North Carolina, is advantages and newly extreme delegations willing to use allegations of voter fraud to cast doubt upon the validity of elections, even elections that have obviously been proven to be free and fair. And what Leonard Leo and John Roberts and the Supreme Court have done over that time is to liberate many of those state legislatures, many of which had been under probation, under the Voting Rights Act and its preclearance enforcement mechanisms, that when the court lifted that in 2013 and said that things have changed in the South and allowed all of these states to go ahead and prune voter rolls and close precincts and require voter ID bills and to enact all of these new restrictions and demands and barriers on absentee voting, a certain specific signature requirements or complicated ways to seal ballots or deadlines on when these ballots had to be received by. All of this together, the legislatures and the courts have really pulled a double knot around our system, all of which advantages Republicans. And as we approach an election in 24 days that looks to be very close in some of these precise states where they've pulled this off, I think we've all got a lot to be concerned about.
We should mention, David, that in your books, you criticize the Democrats because, especially in Rateft, when some Democrats were told that this level of gerrymandering was happening, they either didn't do anything about it or really didn't take it seriously. So a lot of people ask, well, don't the Democrats do this too? How do you answer that question?
The Democrats have gerrymandered to some extent in a handful of states. I think if you were to look at the congressional delegations in Maryland, in Oregon, in New Mexico, you would see minor advantages for the Democratic Party. What you can't identify, however, are any states where Democrats routinely receive more votes, but Republicans routinely hold majorities, even super majorities. And that's what Republicans have done in places like Michigan in the last decade, and advantages that they still hold in places like Wisconsin and North Carolina. There's just nothing comparable on the Democratic side. And being able to hold 65% of the vote, 65% of the seats, even when you win 46% of the votes, is a huge advantage. And what it does is it puts American elections beyond the control of the ballot box. It puts American elections in control of the people who draw the maps, not for one election cycle, but oftentimes for an entire decade. And in states like Wisconsin and North Carolina, it's been a decade and a half of congressional elections and state elections that didn't exactly matter because the outcomes were preordained a long time ago by people who drew the lines.
So we're 24 days out. What concerns you the most, given what you have written about and what we're learning from the headlines I mentioned in the introduction? I mean, to think Republicans are even filing lawsuits to question the legitimacy of overseas ballots cast by military members. What concerns you the most?
I think it's the prospect of litigation in very close states that reaches the U.S. Supreme Court during that period after the election and before the Electoral College meets in the middle of December. What concerns me is a repeat of Bush versus Gore. And what made Bush versus Gore possible back in 2000 is that you had about 547 votes that separated Al Gore and George W. Bush in one state. And ultimately, the litigation and the decision to stop the recount there in the state of Florida rose to the U.S. Supreme Court, which in a 5-4 party line decision stopped the recount and effectively declared George W. Bush the next president of the United States. If you were to see a similar close race in any of these seven states right now that seem to be the ones that matter. And we've had awfully close races in some of these states in both 2016 and 2020, 10,400 votes in the state of Arizona making the difference, right? 11,700 in the state of Georgia in 2020. What you're going to see is litigation over absentee ballots, litigation over mail-in ballots from overseas. If there is a decision made by a local court to extend voting for an extra couple of hours, perhaps in Atlanta or in Philadelphia, because the lines are so long, that these are cases that are going to reach the U.S. Supreme Court in that period after the election. And what we have seen is that this is an extraordinarily extreme partisan court. What we have seen is that the U.S. Supreme Court is really the place where Republican political power is concentrated. We know that Bush versus Gore was the proof of concept for the Republican court capture plan. Mm. We know that the 6-member supermajority on the U.S. Supreme Court, 5 of them nominated by presidents who lost the popular vote, 3 of them lawyers who worked on Bush versus Gore and demonstrated their loyalty to the conservative movement by working on that case. 1 of them in Justice Alito, whose wife has flown the Stop the Steal flag in front of their house. Another in Justice Thomas, whose wife has worked very closely with the Stop the Steal insurrectionists. I don't think there is an awful lot of question about how that court would rule. And that's a terrifying prospect, given that in 2000, Al Gore conceded the race within an hour of the court's decision. And there was relative calm because the court, even though it was making a partisan decision, still had some level of institutional credibility and authority and legitimacy that I think that this court under this Chief Justice has given away and surrendered to the kind of partisan rot and institutional corruption that we have seen. So this court, if they make that decision, I really am terrified about the kind of constitutional crisis that follows.
Where is the pushback on all of this? Because you also, in your piece, write about what is happening, and it's so much is going on. You've got Republican legislators and election boards changing election laws, reworking procedures, altering certification protocols, purging voters, laying the groundwork for 6 weeks of havoc after people vote on November 5th. So where's the pushback on this? You've got Mark Elias at Democracy Docket, who writes about all of the lawyers that are pushing back on all of this and filing lawsuits. But what are your thoughts on that? And then what's the Democratic Party doing about all of this?
Yeah, I think Mark Elias is doing some really important work, and he is leading a heroic team trying to push back, and they've had some success pushing back. I think the trouble here is that the pushback ultimately ends in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm. And there can be success in lower courts. There can be success in some state courts that are not particularly as partisan as some of the circuits that conservatives have captured, or the U.S. Supreme Court, which I would suggest they have entirely captured. And if those are the 9 people who are making this decision, I think what it shows is that Democrats have been outfoxed once again, that it's too late to change that. If those 9 people are going to be the deciders, then the Republican court capture plan that they've been at work on now over the course of 5 decades will have succeeded. And there's not much Democrats can do except try to turn who, right? Justice Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Roberts. The fix is in, and the purpose of the court capture plan has been exactly this: giving Republicans advantages in close elections.
We're speaking with journalist David Daley about media coverage of Republican efforts to suppress the vote and ultimately steal the election. David has been writing about these issues for many, many years. His book, Rat Effed, The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy, exposed the right-wing plan to gerrymander districts across the country. That came out in 2017. 16. His latest book is Anti-Democratic, Inside the Far Right's 50-Year Plot to Control American Elections. We had him on for that show. You can find it at kalw.org. Click news and then your call. If you have any questions or comments, what are your thoughts on media coverage of all of these issues and what's at stake here? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So, David, would you say that in order for this not to happen, Kamala Harris needs to win by a fairly large margin?
I think that's right. I think the only way to prevent some of these states from winding up in the courts is to have a decisive victory by one candidate or another. And that if this is a race that Kamala Harris wins in one or two states by a small handful of votes, that this is going to be contested. And it's going to be chaos, and everything that conservatives can possibly do to slow down certification and throw out specific ballots, they will attempt to do. If this is an election that is more like the 2020 election, and it's a 7 million plus votes in the popular vote, and that several states with five-figure margins would have to be overcome, the Supreme Court back in 2020 wasn't willing to go that far. If we want to keep this court out of this election, it's going to have to be a decisive margin across multiple swing states.
We have an email from Wendy who writes, is there anything Biden can do while still president?
That's a good question. You know, I think we need to be talking about this. And I think the president of the United States has got a pulpit to be talking about this. The president of the United States could be proposing the big structural reforms that I think we so badly need. We could be talking more about the kinds of reforms to the U.S. Supreme Court that might prevent a co-equal branch of government being captured, that might prevent it, what's supposed to be an independent judiciary, from effectively becoming a partisan legislature with a conservative supermajority. And there are things that could be done, and Biden has proposed some of them, you know, a legitimate ethics code with real teeth and real consequences, term limits for justices so that parties can't appoint young ideologues who then stay in these lifetime unelected posts for upwards of 50 years. No other country, and no other modern democracy allows this to happen. And we ought to take some lessons from how Supreme Courts around the world are modeled and created in order to reform our own.
The same applies to the Electoral College, right?
That's absolutely correct, yes.
Yeah. I'm still just blown away that we just don't talk about that more, that we've got a system that is so undemocratic where you don't have the person who gets the most votes, they don't win. I mean, it's just so undemocratic. And that person is given the power to appoint lifetime Supreme Court justices. And these
that
people
are then confirmed by a U.S. Senate that is wildly anti-democratic. that by 2035, 70% of the country will be living in 15 states with 30 senators, and the other 30% of the population will control 70% of the Senate. And they're the ones who are confirming these justices who are being nominated oftentimes by presidents that have lost the popular vote. You would never design a country like this. Mm.
Let's talk about the other piece you wrote about the two men who have re-engineered the U.S. electoral system in favor of Republicans. You write that if Trump wins, right-wing courts, gerrymandered state legislatures, and an extreme Republican caucus in the House create constitutional chaos over the certification of the election, two men cleared the path. One is Republican strategist Chris Jankowski. Some people might not be that familiar with him. You write that he masterminded the partisan gerrymanders that tilted state legislatures and delegations across the South and the purple Midwest toward extreme Republicans. He ended Barack Obama's second term before it started and rendered elections in Wisconsin and North Carolina all but meaningless over the last decade and a half. Tell us more about Chris Jankowski and where he comes from.
Chris Jankowski worked at an organization called the Republican State Leadership Committee, otherwise known as the RSLC, back in the late 2000s. And he worked largely with state legislatures. And after the 2008 election that resulted in Barack Obama and the Democratic supermajority in the Senate, Jankowski had a revelation. He understood that as historic as the 2008 election had been, that the 2010 election could be more consequential because it was a redistricting year. And so Jankowski comes up with a strategy called Red Map, which is the redistricting majority project. He gets about $30 million from the Chamber of Commerce, from Exxon, from the Koch brothers, from other big GOP donors. And what they do is they go after about 107 state legislative seats in 16 states that would give them the power to have every seat at the table when it comes to redistricting and map making that following year. And with the technology that had come online over the previous 10 years, map making in 2011 was essentially the power to pick winners and losers for a decade. And so Republicans took control in Pennsylvania and Indiana and Ohio and Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida. And they used that power to draw themselves districts and maps that they would not lose control of state legislatures in, and that they were also able to draw congressional delegations where they effectively could not lose. So a state like Pennsylvania, which goes for Obama in 2012, elects 13 Republicans and 5 Democrats to the U.S. Senate. To the U.S. House. A state like Ohio, which goes for Obama, elects 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats. Michigan goes for Obama, 9 Republicans and 5 Democrats. North Carolina, still a very close state at the presidential level that year, but 9 Republicans, 4 Democrats. And what you begin to see is that even though Obama's reelected in 2012 and Democrats hold the House, Democrats win 1.4 million more votes in 2012 for the U.S. House, but Republicans hold the chamber, and it's not even close, 234 to 201. And it's because of the maps that were drawn in all of those states, awarding Republicans huge advantages in places where the maps probably should have been 50-50 or slightly favoring Democrats. That was it for Obama's second term, the night he was reelected. And elections have not had much consequence at the district level, either for the U.S. House or for the state legislature in many of those states ever since.
David, we're almost out of time for this segment. What are your thoughts about media coverage of these issues? On the one hand, I read a number of the headlines that were seen from everyone from NBC, every outlet from NBC to CNN. But at the same time, you regularly hear that the country is very divided without mentioning what you just laid out. I mean, you can't do that in a soundbite, obviously, but the system is so rigged for minority rule, and yet we don't hear much about that.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think the media has gotten a little bit better. There's more coverage of these issues and these lawsuits than there's been in the past, but it's not anywhere near enough. And the history and the context is entirely lacking. We get a lot of horse race. What we don't get, if you were running a horse race in which one horse had to start a half mile behind and have a couple of its legs tied together, and that the judges and the umpires were going to be all chosen by one side, that might be relevant to how you cover the race itself, right? And I don't think we have anywhere near enough coverage of the role of this Supreme Court, the impact of state legislatures, and how it is all tied together, right? I mean, what's happening in Georgia right now? A state elections board that is trying to require a hand count, that's trying to allow local MAGA boards the ability to call results into question and slow it all down. All of this is made possible by a gerrymandered legislature that appointed that board, and by a U.S. Supreme Court led by John Roberts, effectively appointed by Leonard Leo, that ended the protections of the Voting Rights Act and allowed states like Georgia to enact these kinds of changes without preclearance. And we don't know that. And this is all important modern history. And if this election indeed winds up before the U.S. Supreme Court because of the actions of these gerrymandered legislatures, it's not because we are a super close country. It's because one side reworked the rules to give themselves giant advantages in all of these elections. Mm.
David Daley's latest book is Anti-Democratic: Inside the Far Right's 50-Year Plot to Control American Elections. David, it's such important information. Difficult to hear, but very important. We'd love to have you back. Thank you for your work, and thanks for joining us.
Anytime, Rose. Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we'll talk about the new documentary Homegrown, somewhat connected to this segment, actually. It offers a chilling portrait of the growing far-right movement pushing American democracy to the brink. The documentary filmmaker embedded himself with Donald Trump supporters ahead of the January 6th attack. We'll speak with Michael Primo. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.